shows off, but it's up there.
Yeah, well, I think we're okay.
You're okay?
Yeah, I think so, too. Gee, what a nice crowd. My name is Bob Gifford. I have been coming here also since I was 4 years old. We came in 1936, and over the time, my family and the extended family has four cottages on Little John's, and we spent every summer there until I went to college. Tonight, I wanted to show you, I'm focusing mainly on Little John because that's what I know the best. As you know, these islands were once called Hog Islands, and in 1645, a man named John Cousins came, and this island has been named for him. We're not exactly sure where the name Little John came from. It is possible we thought that maybe John had a son, and he was a little guy and called Little John. Not much was going on here until late 1800s. And one of the first houses that I know about, certainly not the first, is this house, which is still standing, called the Melrose House. You can see that, you come over to Little John. It's got a lot more growth around it, but there it is. Something happened in around 1893, when the Atlantic Improvement Company in Boston bought up almost the entire western end of Little John and marked out a lot of housing lots, very small housing lot, and a large housing lot, and built this hotel. And this hotel was originally called the Melrose Hotel and later the Rockmere Hotel. And it changed this place a lot. Here it is, a postcard of it. Forget the thing at the end. Somebody was writing about someone who passed away, but look at the picture. And this was a real going concern, this hotel, beginning in the late 1890s. And not only that, but earlier, this house was built on Cousins Island. It was called the Casco House, was a rooming house, and people would come up to stay there. And it unfortunately burned a few years later. But it's right there next to the right of the dock, and it's kind of interesting that was there. This is the Hotel Rockmere. Now, just to give you an idea of what went on in the Hotel Rockmere, this was in 1907. And this is the breakfast which you had. Cantaloupe, sliced bananas, duke prune, shredded wheat, boiled white, all these things. Not bad for a little. And at that time, the island was reached from Portland for 25 cents. Round trip, 40 cents. Terms, you could stay at the house, or they had a couple of cottages for the hotel. You could stay for $2 a day, $9 to $12 a week. Special rate at June and September. And people would get there through the Casco Bay lines. They would get on a liner from Portland, come down the bay, as Neil has already told us about. And here's an old picture of the Casco Bay lines picking up people, dropping people. This is an old wharf at Little John's. You'll notice there's no store. There's no real post office. It was a shed there. And there was also a tennis court. It says, enjoy driving game of tennis. We'll find a court. There was a wonderful tennis court up behind the hotel. And for those who might remember it, there were great matches there between the islands. between many of the tennis enthusiasts on that island. Here, for example, is a picture of the women. They're not really dressed as they would today at the Wimbledon, but there they are. Now, at that time, and I mean, focus on Little John's here. At that time, before 1893, the island had really been kind of divided up. The far right had been purchased by Mrs. Sewell. So we still call this Sewell's Point down there. And that stayed right on because Mrs. Sewell's daughter married Dr. Orville Rogers, who is a doctor here, and who took care of many of us when we were kids on the island here. And that land stayed by itself, and they built a very beautiful home there. It's been renovated quite severely if you drive by, but this house is right on the shore, beautiful beach there, the nice wharf. This was the Sewell house or Dr. Rogers' house during that time. And there was another sluice of land that almost a quarter of the island that was owned by the people that built this house. We call them the Dickermans. I'm not sure who built them, but it was called the Dickerman family. And they owned right across the whole island, just as Dr. Rogers had done. So that left about a third of the island for the riffraff. And so this development company from Boston decided that this was a place you could make money, and they were going to turn this island into a resort, which it had never been. So they began building houses, and they built this. This is where I live. They built these houses. This was a house my father up in the top eventually bought. This is where we live now. But they built this place, which was called the Arcade. It was a rooming house, and people would come, and they would stay in the room. They could bring their own meals, and they could get a boat and swim. And this place eventually was torn down before my time, in the 1920s. So it was really amazing the number of cottages that this company built. They were very, just as you know, very summer cottages made all of wood. How they got all that stuff over here and built these houses, I don't know, but the hotel as well. Here, for example, was Little John Island. At that time, these houses were built about that time. This little house, I eventually got this little place here. And we have fixed it up, and part of my family lives there now. This house was called, it was built about at that time, and this house was called the Highland House. And it was originally lived in by Mrs. Prescott. When they left, they built their own house. This house fell into ruin. In a way. There it was when we came here in late 1930s. And so the town of Yarmouth decided to sell it because people hadn't paid their taxes on it, and they were going to have an auction. And my mother said, I'm going to this auction. Now my father was a minister, their salary was not what you'd call much. But my mother went over the mainland to this auction. And you had to there were some other people there, you had to put down a price on a piece of paper and then submit it. And while she did that, she saw some other person put something down. My mother, a little nervous, crossed out hers, upped her bid. And she put the bid in, and they said, they looked at the bids, and they said, okay, Mrs. Gifford, you've won the house. The house is yours, $100. Oh, and by the way, there was an artesian well, quite a bit of property around it. And so my folks worked their fingers to the bone over the next several years and fix this house up. That's where, that's the main house where we live at this moment. I have a few pictures of cousins. There's an old picture of the chapel and the old schoolhouse. Postcard was dated 1912. Here's a picture of Harmony Hill from Little John looking across. And you can see all the construction and wonderful houses that are there. I mean, this was just a prize place to be. Here, down here on Little John's was a log cabin, still there, but has fallen apart and not cared for. Here's another house that Lee was talking about, this area, I think, near where it used to, they used to play baseball, and now there's houses there. Is that right, Lee?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be right up there from where the house, the cottage is in the front.
Right.
Over to the left, it was all field.
Yeah.
That's where the ball games were.
That's where the ball games were.
Here's another picture of the Main Street and Cousins Island. Some of you may recognize some of those places. What?
The little log cabin. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Now here's a post, one of the post offices. Yeah. You remember that one?
Yeah, it's the old Talbot place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes,
and Bill Gregory.
Yeah.
This is Edith Whiting's
yeah.
house.
Yep.
And her mother, Mrs. She had married somebody named Yaffe, so it was Edith Whiting Yaffe. My family has many portraits that she did of us. It was just, she was a spectacular person. And when she was dying in a nursing home, I took my bride-to-be. I was hoping that I'd marry this woman. And she's, of course, sitting here now. And I took her and I said, Edith, because I had been very close to Edith Whiting, and I said, Edith, you know, I'm thinking of marrying this person. And she looked at my wife and she said, well, my wife wasn't, I think said she wasn't ready or wasn't quite ready or something. And Edith said, you'd be a damn fool if you didn't. So I got her. This was just to show the rain barrels. Every house had a rain barrel. We collected rain off the roof, and we didn't drink it, but we used it for washing clothes, washing dishes, and it's amazing. You could fill one of these things up, and you'd be amazed at how much water you could have in one of those. And we all had an outhouse. I have saved mine. As finally we got an indoor plumbing just a few years ago. And here's the well. And I used to have to come from the house up on the hill to get water several times a day for my family, lug it up the hill, come back down, pump it. But there were many wells like this where we absolutely depended on for our water. And here was the an old picture of the bridge coming from Little John Island over to Cousins. And I used to drive, I'll tell you in a moment, I used to drive the Cushman Bakery truck when I got old enough from Little John Island. And I would come sailing around here and over to Cousins Island. It was a very memorable time. And there's another view looking back to Little John's. To the house in the field. Now you say, how did we get, people have already mentioned how we got to the island, because there was no bridge, of course. And we all went to the handy boat service up in Falmouth, Forsyth, parked our car up in the field. Harold Sawyer, who was a part owner of this place, lived on Little John Island, and he also owned a house here. And this is where we got This was the first Nellie G. This is the Nellie G that we took when we came over here for the very first time. And the Sweat family, Walter Sweat Sr., was running it, and later his son, Walter Sweat Jr., would run these. Great old chugging thing. We loved it. We fell in love with this. And then finally, it just went away.
It sunk in the back.
What's that?
It sunk in the back. It was loaded. Your water was up to your ankles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It would sink. It would sink down. You can see it's very low in the back. And there's a lot of people there. Yeah. And here's Nellie G. The three. That was Nellie G. One. There was another Nellie G. Maybe in Booth Bay or somewhere. It wasn't here. And then this was Nellie G. This was like a Cadillac, right? And we loved this. And Walter Sweat ran this thing faithfully for years. Also, as was mentioned, the Casco Bay lines came a couple of times a day, brought the mail, brought the ice, brought big things down. And this was an old picture of it coming into Cousins Dock. Here was Little John Dock before there was a store. You could see that the post office had been built, but there was just a shack where the store would eventually be. Here was the post office, which of course went out of anybody's need when the bridge to the mainland was built. But this was a tremendous, what I'm showing you now, what I want to really emphasize in my talk is the sense of community that developed on that island through this area, the store and the post office. People would gather here. Here was the store, and there's Margaret Sawyer standing there. She ran the store. And that, I think, is standing there. And I worked for Margaret. My first job ever. But this place was where everybody congregated. People came to get the mail. People came to get ice cream, to get tonic, to get lobsters, to get gasoline for your boat. And this was a place where kids came and they dove off and swam, and everybody knew everybody. Everybody knew everybody's business, and because they were down here every single day. And this was the community of Little John Island that I remember and was so vivid and so important to me. Here's another shot. Here comes the boat, and Nellie G. is coming in, letting off. Here's people coming down to meet it. There's an old jalopy that's there, and this is just such a familiar sight to me. And here's the Cushman truck that I used to drive, and I would go and stop. I had bakeries come in every day, and I would stop at all the houses that wanted bakery, including your Mayo's mother-in-law, Mrs. Kenny. And I would drive up there, and she would always have me come in, and she said, yes, I'd like to buy a box of Scotch cookies. So she would buy the big box of Scotch cookies, and she would invite me in. We'd open the box, she'd pour me some milk, and we would sit there and talk while I ate all her Scotch cookies. Here is the Handy Andy that we heard about, Harold Sawyer's boat. He used to take people out of clam bakes and all, and he often kept it here at the dock. His first iteration blew up and burned, but it was replaced with this. And you can see the people standing at the dock, up at the post office. When the mail would come in, people would go up there dying to know whether they got a letter from their boyfriend or so. And Alice Jones, who was the postmistress, would look at it and she'd hold it up to the window and everybody would laugh. Here's the Nellie and the Handy Andy parked here. There's my truck that I zoomed around the two islands in. It had no brake, no emergency brake, so it was a problem. Here is just an example of the excitement that goes on. The boat would come in several times. There were always people to meet the boat talking, always stuff being lugged from one place to another. Here comes, there's a Casco Bay liner that is leaving. And here is four young, this was a problem for us. My group were always about 4 years younger than all the girls that were on the island. And they would pay no attention to us, but we were totally in love with all of them. Here's four of them, and totally out of our reach. But people came here all the time to swim and and this is my group. And you can see I'm up there not wanting my picture taken in the back left. And in the front, in the right front, some of you may remember Larry Pugh. And Larry Pugh went on to great success. He became chairman of Wrangler Jeans. He became the head of the board of the Art Museum in Portland, and he became a life trustee of Colby College. So he was a very, very prominent individual that came. The rest of us, well, we struggled along. Here's some more. There we are, eyeing the women. But the other thing that brought the community together was church services. They had a church service at the dock every Sunday. That's actually my dad standing here. Where he ever got the white coat and all, I don't know, but he's giving the church service there. This is my mother here, and many of these people would be familiar to many of you who knew some of them. Here's a clam bank that Harold Sawyer took out to Jules Island, and he's there unloading the stuff, getting stuff ready to cook up the lobsters and the clams, which was another thing that brought people together. Now, during the war, the Army expropriated a place for the soldiers to live. We had our own soldiers over there. This was the barracks that was done. Soldiers lived there. And we all got, as kids, we all got to know them by name. And not only that, they had a Coast Guard boat on one side of the submarine net, which I'll show you in a minute, and the Navy boat on the other. And they had not much to do, so they'd let us come on board as kids. And we made tremendous lifelong friends with some of these kids. And they in fact, married many of the women on the island. Now this is the submarine net that was, you couldn't take pictures of it, but it's published in a book, and I found it, and Lee found it for me. And here's the store and the truck, and you can see up here, there was a place where it could be opened by an apparatus which was in front of the barracks over on the left, so boats could get by. But this was, you know, this closed off the harbor, and the harbor was incredible. They had ships in there, the battleship Missouri, for example. I even took my sailboat, I suppose illegally, a little tiny sailboat, and I sailed around the battleship Missouri that was anchored out there, and they had destroyers and cruisers, and just the Atlantic Fleet would be poured into that harbor up there. These are the soldiers that were on the island, one of whom, I think it's this one, is Tinker, who married Catherine.
He was killed during the war.
He was killed. Yeah, he left this assignment, went overseas, and he was killed. So Catherine Tinker was left widow. But these were people we all became so friendly with as they were here. I think I'm, just to show you that we weren't immune from damage from the hurricanes. We had a couple of really whoppers that came through. Another thing that brought the people together is there was a man who came to the hotel every year. His name was Driscoll.
Roger Driscoll.
He was a great golfer. If you go over to the golf, to Shabee Golf Course, you find his name, having won the tournament. But he was also a real humanitarian. And every year, he held a swimming meet for little kids. And they did it down here on the rocks near our house. And that's it. Roger is out there, you know, near the water. And this is the annual swimming meet, which also brought everybody together. But suddenly, this appeared. And you wouldn't believe it. Things stopped like that. The store went out of business. The post office, done. The hotel. Dead. Nobody there. The dock is empty. People began thinking about building all year round houses. People began thinking about their property, where their property lines were. It was like a completely different atmosphere which happened. And that's what we miss, I think. But we have, you know, gradually a new community is beginning to build. It just isn't quite as active as it once was. That is it from me, folks. I appreciate you.
She says ace before beauty. I keep telling her beauty was a horse.
Just to let you know how property has gone up. I was reading Bill Caldwell's book on Casco Bay, and it said in 1950, the government, by that time, they were getting rid of all of the islands, extra islands that they had purchased during the war. And they were getting rid of Little Shabee, 200 acres, and they offered it to the state of Maine for a dollar, and it was turned down. They offered it to the state, the city of Portland, and it was turned down. In 1951, a man from New York paid $6,250 for it. Then his estate settled it in 1972, and they somebody bought it for $155,000, and it was the state of Maine.
One thing I wanted to save, just one more bit of information till the end. Like Mia was saying and Bob was saying, we didn't have running water. My job was to come up and get buckets of fresh water that we could drink or use for cooking. One place we came was the old pump to the right, or if you're looking at that was at one time where the old pump fire engine was, there was a hand pump over there. And then the other place was down by where Janine Coleman has her place, and the Native Americans called that the Fountain of Youth. So if you look through the old cemeteries around here, the old Hill Cemetery that's up on the Tinker Preserve, and even the cemetery here on Cousins Street, some of the folks lived to their 80s and 90s, and this was back in the 1800s. The women may have died early in childbirth, but I'll tell you, you guys sure made it through a lot longer.
Surely has something to say.
Okay, Shirley has something to say, and then if anybody has questions, well, feel free to take them. This is Shirley Gibson.
Yes, Shirley Jeffrey.
Do I supposed to do anything? Push that in.
I just have one memorable day in the war. I don't know whether it was 90. I don't know. I don't remember whether it was 44 or 45, but we lived at the northern end in that house that we lived in. It's the Eben Hill house. It's burned down now. But we heard a roar, such a roar, and my father yelled and said, "Everybody come, quick, climb the ladder. We're going up on the house." We sat up on the ridgepole, and the sky was black with planes. I've never forgotten it. We just sat there and it roared. I don't know where they came from, but they were going over to Europe.
They came from Brunswick.
Any of you remember that? Besides us?
It was Brunswick Naval Air.
But my dad had to sit up on the ridgepole. I was 10 then. I never forgot it. Okay, that's it.